same place she went to. And she said, oh, we get on the show.
Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Dennis Galecki. Welcome to the 296th Imagine lecture and discussion every Tuesday, September through June, on different subjects. First Tuesday is always around arts and creativity. Second, around architecture and design, and that's where we are now in February. And then we go to history, looking back so we can imagine looking forward. And finally, on the fourth, Tuesdays is around nature and science. And those occasional fifth Tuesdays, we're going to use our art, go back to the arts, but look at investing, the art of investing video series. So, a lot of familiar faces. Anyone here for the first time, though? If so, welcome. What we do is pass a sign-up sheet. Make sure everybody signs in, if you would. And if you're new, add legibly, please, your email address, and we'll be glad to add you to the network, if you will. We have a photographer today. There's an upcoming issue of Spree Magazine that will point to this Imagine series. We're quite honored. And please, so Mr. Casey will take different pictures of the speaker and whatnot as this presentation continues. I always like to read these bios into the archival report, if you will, the recording that we're doing. Yes. Dennis Meyer is an artist, architect, and educator. In 2009, Dennis established the Fargo House, a center for the urban imagery in Buffalo, New York. By the way, I ran across that house inadvertently in European papers. Virtually nobody in Buffalo probably was aware of it, but somehow the European press had picked up on it, did an article, and it was floating around there, and that was a nice feather in his cap. In 2014, he founded Assembly House 150, a nonprofit space for experimental art architecture projects. That's the church that on Elmwood, former church on Elmwood and Edward Street, Immaculate Conception it was at one time. Dennis Meyer was selected as the 2012-2013 Artist in Residence at the Albright Knox Art Gallery. Exhibitions by Meyer have been presented at venues nationally and internationally, including the Mattress Factory Art Museum, Pittsburgh, the Bi-City Biennial of Architecture and Urbanism in China, Shenzhen, and China, and Black and White Gallery and Project Space in Brooklyn, New York, Pulse Miami Art Fair, and Real Art Ways in Hartford, Connecticut. Meyer is the recipient of a NYFA fellowship, New York Fine Arts Fellowship in 2012, and the NISCA Independent Projects Grant in 2010, and McDowell Colony Fellowship in 2008. His work has been featured in the New York Times, Architectural Review, Arch Daily, Architect Magazine, and on the national radio program Smart City Radio. Meyer is currently a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Architecture at SUNY University at Buffalo, where he has taught since 2004. It's an impressive resume, another one of our stars, hidden stars here in Buffalo to many, but not to this audience. Let's give a warm welcome to Dennis Meyer.
We'll do Q&A at the end. Can I remove it?
Please walk around with that.
Oh, great.
Perfect. And again, we'll do a nice Q&A at
perfect.
The end.
Love the Q&A. Q&A is my favorite.
Well,
okay.
Make time for it.
Thank you so much for the warm introduction. It's become something of a ritual for me to have the opportunity to come here every year, 2 years, and how that affects me personally is that the slideshow is always different, and the ideas are often different. It's an evolution. And so it's really a lovely opportunity for me to reflect upon the transformation of the things that I'm thinking about. and to really synthesize the projects that I've been working on in a new way. So I'm grateful and thankful for the opportunity. I'm a guy who, some will call an architect, others will say, don't dare call yourself an architect. I think of myself largely as an artist. I'm also an educator. I've been teaching at the University of Buffalo in the Department of Architecture for 15 years now. And most of the work that I do, well, pretty much all the work that I do, whether it be art-related, architecture-related, or in the realm of education, is always about the built environment. I'm very interested in how we think creatively about the built environment and how we make meaning as a community, and how citizens engage with each other in order to make meaning in the creation of place. And I think this is an incredibly challenging thing to think about today, because it's very hard to consider what it is that gives a place meaning in a contemporary context. And when I was looking at the amazing video of the ridges and listening to the takeaways at the end there, don't think about necessarily the bridge, the object, the artifact, but think about also the people that made those things and how they were made and the stories embedded in them. And I think that's so important, so essential. And these days, most of my work has shifted from thinking about the objectness of things to thinking about the collaborative making of things. And I'm going to run through a kind of series of projects. And I'll start just to tell you a little bit more about my background. And when I came to the city of Buffalo, it was 2002. It's just kind of ramping up to this period in the city's history where demolition and kind of transformation of the urban context was a very big issue, hot button topic. And I was very fascinated by the spectacle and the tension and the public discourse around issues related to demolition, transformation, development. And I was always of two minds about it. Two minds because on the one hand, I felt that, you know, this is absolutely probably a kind of a movement towards something, but there's certainly a tremendous feeling of loss, tremendous feeling of emptiness. There's a marked, really a moment of transition. And at the same time, I was kind of also taken by the spectacular nature of the transformative process of demolition and urban transformation, and to see on the east side of the city large facades literally being tossed and turned as if they're almost like toys. And I thought, this is just almost bizarre. And so there was some kind of a playful embrace of the spectacular and nearly surreal aspect at the same time that I was, you know, deeply disturbed by what that meant for the people in the community and by the intensity of the change effort. So at that time in my life, I was really thinking about the forces of demolition and preservation as opening up a particular kind of creative space. So not just thinking about it socially, environmentally, but also thinking of it creatively. What does it mean to think about a force of change, a force of movement ahead, progress, versus a force of fixity, versus a force of stability, versus a force of stubbornness? What does that mean? What does that space look like? And I think in this particular in the city, it's one of the things that I love about being in Buffalo, is that the citizens here are so engaged with issues related to preservation, development, urban architectural issues. It's a very, you cannot say that people are not involved. They are so involved, and more so than almost any other place I've lived. And I'm interested in thinking about that kind of tension and that space on multiple levels. So early on, and these projects are, the projects are probably now going on 10 years old. But I was doing large-scale installation work, largely sculptural projects, using residual building fragments that were gathered from sites of demolition. And I was transforming those pieces into large aggregations, large constellations of material, and trying to find places to present these artifacts in order to harness precisely that tension that I'm speaking to you about, that tension between preservation, development, progress, stasis, movement ahead, pushing back. What does that look like as an idea? This project was actually presented at the this is at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center during the Beyond in Western New York Biennial. That was back in 2010. Another view of that. And what began to happen around that time is that I ended up working a lot in studio spaces that were oftentimes warehouse-like buildings or places that were in the process of being renovated or partially renovated. Most artists looking for affordable studio space end up in similar kinds of situations. And I would always, after a period of time, have to move because the place would get to its next stage of development. I lost my affordable studio space, had to find another venue. And you know, I'm carrying hulking things with me, and moving for me is it's a challenge. So at that time, I began to think about ways of testing and experimenting with my way of thinking about time and matter and change, and thinking about how to experiment with that in a place over a continuous period of time. And so working with some West Side housing activists and Duville College in about 2010, I was able to acquire this house on Fargo Avenue that at the time was slated for demolition. It had been extensively stripped and looted, and as a result lost all its really nice interior qualities, the beautiful woodwork and the trim. All the doors were gone. Of course, the plumbing was gone. So it was really a kind of a something of a carte blanche, but not really, because what had happened was that in the process of its vandalization, it actually exposed the layers of things. It opened up holes. It allowed me to see materials inside in a new way. And so I actually started to take cues from the interior of the building to think about how I might inhabit it. And I have a kind of an idea thinking about this, which is that places, every house especially, is a place of assembling things. You put together walls, the floors, the ceilings, the tables, the chairs, the lamps, but also the emotive experiences, the things like memories, the dreams and the desires. And inside the house, I'm the inhabitant, but I'm the director of these flows of things. And so some of the first things I began to do was just to make what I thought of as three-dimensional drawings using leftover objects, many of which were gathered from the basement of the house or the attic of the house, and kind of bringing them around and allowing them to be organized in various places on the walls, floors, and ceilings, almost like drawing a first mark in the sand or on the ground before you start to inhabit something. Just mark the place. And so these were very simple series of gestures carried out with artifacts ranging from brooms to boxes to grates and so on. And then I began to think more substantively about getting inside of this kind of space. And over the next 8 years, really, I have been building consistently into the house using found objects, salvaged building materials, antiques, a lot of toys and architectural miniatures. Also opening up different kinds of spaces in the house. And these spaces are oftentimes defined as much by the objects as by the surfaces of walls, floors, or ceilings. I'm interested, for example, in thinking about the relationship of a chair. This is an old valet's chair, which now becomes embedded in a box, and starting to build a world inside of that box, and also thinking about the house in the same way, that the closet is actually a box, and inside the box opens up, and inside the closet one finds a different kind of world. And so to start to see the relationships, different scales, between the world that's built for the chair, the world that's built for the closet, I collect at the same time innumerable antique architectural miniatures. And I build these into the walls of the house in order to suggest, to conjure, to promote the discovery of a different kind of place. A place that maybe exists in a different scale, it exists in a different form. It exists as a dream. And for me, the idea of the dream is the most powerful, powerful part of the house. Because the house is embedded in the dream, and the dream begins to bring the house forward. So over time, I have excavated layers, taking away the ceiling, opening up to the levels above, going down, down to other floors. Oftentimes, it becomes disoriented to look up. One doesn't always know where one is. But I continue to work decisively on the idea that I'm discovering something in the process, and that the idea, that the discovery that I'm after here is really a different way of thinking about a house, but it's also a way of opening up my idea of what architecture could be, what a place could be, what a discovery, what it is to live in a place of continuous discovery and enchantment, and really of wonder. The house is actually livable too. I live there. I host exhibitions there now. I host tour groups, mostly for high school age students. I conduct drawing workshops now. And I have tried over the past several years to really open the space up. When I say open it up, I mean not just for me, but to larger audiences. And I have the thought there is that the interior space of the house is really a kind of a mirror, that it reflects things. And I'd like to open it up in order to find resonances with the world beyond its immediate walls. And one of the first projects I did around this theme was called The House of Collective Repair, and this was facilitated by the Albright Knox Art Gallery, with whom I've been working for the past 4 or 5 years now on another project. But the House of Collective Repair was basically an initiative which, through which I took the opportunity to invite building industry tradespeople to the house and to respond to it. So I invited a plumber and a drywall person and a woodworker or a window and door restorer and a mason. And each of them came individually and we talked shop, told them, hey, this is what I think about a house. And they said to me, this is what I think about a house. And then I kind of presented a challenge to them at the end of our talk, and I said, well, can you build me a model of a house? But I'd like you to only use the materials that you work with in your profession. So the painter had to work with paint sticks and paint cans and dried paint skins, and the mason had to work with bricks and mortar. And we presented those projects together at the Albright Knox in 2012. And I just want to show one of these projects. I think it's so lovely. This was Dan Farrell's project, which he called the Guitar House. And Dan is a window and door restorer. Lost Cities Restoration is his gig. He took an old door, an old 5-panel door, and he basically cut the whole thing up into these mini 2x4s and 2x6s. But you can see this kind of curious base, this foundation that he built for it. And the foundation is actually a guitar. One can remove the house scene in elevation, but one can remove the exoskeleton of the wood frame and really play the foundation of the house. And I thought this is such a beautiful idea because Dennis, old houses, they resonate acoustically in very special ways. The wood of an old house sounds different than the wood of a new house. You can play the wood of an old house. And so he took that idea very literally and built a foundation for the house out of the door, a foundation that one could actually detach and strum a tune on. And I love the project so much for many reasons, but one of the things that came out of this is that building industry professionals, those who often work with their hands, are many times not thought of as creative individuals, or, I mean, like the labor force or what have you. But what I realized was happening through this particular process of engagement is that there was a space opened up for Dan to try something unique and to show off his talents in a very special way. And I thought that there's an opportunity here to engage professionals in the building trades and to think about the fruits of their efforts, not just as utilitarian objects or satisfying certain needs, but to also think creatively and productively about the contribution that they may have from different vantage points. And I'm going to talk a little bit about this later, because this actually led me on my current train of thinking. We also have done dinners at the house, and this is a dinner collaboration with Chef Colleen Stillwell. And the idea is very simple to describe. It sounds very complicated, but it's very simple. 9 rooms, 9 courses, 12 minutes per course per room. A processional dining experience. Every course is designed to resonate with the room in which the food is presented and consumed. It's a way of eating the house over an evening. That's how we thought of it. Now, we also we brought students from the Academy of Visual Performing Arts who've actually done this amazing documentary. I got to find this thing because they did this documentary like 8 years ago, and I was contacted originally by their instructor. He said, "Dennis, I have some students who would love to do a film about your house project." I said, "Sure, okay." Send them over. I didn't think anything would come of it, and I actually, frankly, didn't think it would be very good. But they showed it to me, and I thought it was so cool what they did that I put it in the show at the Albright Knox. And I thought, these guys are so great. That's so wonderful that these high school students can get engaged like this and could do this quality work. So I just thought it was worthy of a higher level of presentation. We'll also do workshops. This one's with the New York State Art Teachers Association. They've been coming by doing drawing workshops in the house. We basically think of the whole house as a still life, set up the drawing boards, and they're drawing from the objects and the arrangements and materials and things. And then I bring my students from the University of Buffalo, very different, kind of more architectural drawing. So the architectural students go through, and they kind of, this particular project, they kind of selected a fragment, a 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot cubic fragment, and drew what's called an axonometric drawing, which is basically, it's measurable in all dimensions, there's no distortion. And then, even cooler, they built models of the drawings. So they then start to transform the pieces of the house, which they drew, into something spatial, material for themselves, and they actually developed some funky little house proposals that came out of that initiative. Those projects were part of their curriculum in the first year of the University of Buffalo Department of Architecture. I also have been hosting exhibitions in the gallery space that we built on the first floor. This is a show by Dan Solomon. Dan Solomon did a project that I just thought was so marvelous. Basically, I have to describe it. He was a student of architecture at Cornell, and for his thesis, he basically built a room-sized box on the bed of his half-ton pickup truck. And he drove around, he left the school and said, "You know, I'm going away for a couple weeks on my thesis," which is great. And he drove around the country in a circuitous loop, and he asked random strangers that he met along the way to bestow to him a gift in the form of a fragment of a building that was meaningful in their lives. And he built all of the building fragments into the box truck, which he had built on his half-ton pickup truck. And when he got back to Ithaca, he punctured the box with 120 pinhole apertures, and he turned the entire box into a camera device, which allowed for him to capture these phantasmagoric images of the assembled pieces of buildings bestowed to him as gifts from random strangers from across the United States. And then we presented the artifacts from the journey, as well as the photographs inside the gallery. This is another show by wonderful artist Caitlin Cass, who's been doing some extraordinary comics. And these are very fanciful, but also embedded with historical narratives. And Caitlin kind of works to transform ideas about place, interpretation of the past, with a kind of sense of comedic relief, I think. And she's an interesting artist to me, just like Dan was, because they're both dealing with the identity of places. And I'm intensely invested in how individuals interpret the past, present, and future of their surroundings. And so their bodies of work have really, I believe, were worthy of support and the kind of things that we want to show in the house, because they tie into the overall mission of what we're trying to do there. When I say we, I mean me and the house. I also make large-scale collages and prints. This one, I think, is at Roswell right now. But there's a series of larger-scale digital prints that are constructed by documenting aspects of the house and then layering it up with photographs taken from the interior. And I also make kind of fanciful architectural models, sculptural objects that suggest imaginary places, and those are oftentimes exhibited in museums and galleries and the like, and other kinds of things that border on drawing, and I'm trying to take straightforward elevation views of the interior of the house's contents. Okay, so enough about the house. Back to the tradespeople. So while I was working on that project, and I was just talking about Dan Farrell's amazing guitar, I started to strategize a way of working in a larger scale way with community stakeholders, building industry professionals, artists, architects, designers, those in the trades, and what would it look like to be able to create a community space where we could work on collaborative projects together and where we could teach skills related to the building trades, but also use the arts as a kind of a fulcrum to open things up and think a bit differently about how we go about the process. So about that time, I was very fortunate, or sometimes I think I wasn't, but I was fortunate to be able to acquire this building that was in need of serious repair. It's located at 150 Edward Street. It's the former Immaculate Conception Church. It's a 9,000 square foot neo-Gothic interior. It has three different construction phases that range from the 1860s, 1890s, and then a facade addition in 1950. There were two giant holes in the roof when I acquired the building. And promptly accelerated, really, the nonprofit initiative, which is called Assembly House 150. We realized visionary art and architectural projects to enhance the sense of magic in the built environment. Magic is very important. And intensify awareness of the life cycles of places. We transform ordinary and everyday surroundings into powerful settings of discovery and wonderment. So some of the same ideas that I was talking to you about with respect to the house are really magnified within the space of Assembly House 150. Assembly House has really now become the locus of my creative activities. I believe very strongly that what we think about a city and how we perceive it informs the ways we act in it. And so what we try to do inside Assembly House is to think differently about what a city could be. But we also think about our city, the city that we find ourselves in now, think about its past, think about its current state, and certainly, and probably first and foremost, think about where we want to take it. The Society for the Advancement of Construction-Related Arts is the primary program of Assembly House. The Society for the Advancement of Construction-Related Arts, SACRA, is a collaboration with the Albright Knox Art Gallery's Innovation Lab. And really, the Albright Knox deserves a great deal of credit for taking a leap and working with a crazy guy like me, because it's very hard for a large-scale institution to collaborate with an artist whose work, from many vantage points, is risky. And I think, I'm not saying there haven't been challenges, but it's been super exciting and well worth it to have been working with them over the past 3 or 4 years now on this initiative. So what we do We basically teach skills in construction and craftsmanship with a focus on carpentry and woodworking. And our target audience are people on social services. So we're working with Erie County's Department of Social Services as a primary recruiter, and we have a 15-week training program. I'm just going to scroll through some of these images so you see the people working in the workshop space. We have a 15-week training program that's focused on communicating basic skills in carpentry and woodworking, but also there's a life skills component, because that's a very important part of this matrix. So that the life skills component looks at things like nutrition education. It looks at presentation, job, interview skills. It looks at transportation-related issues. So we've built a kind of holistic curriculum. The art and construction piece is at the core, but it's surrounded by a network of community stakeholders who can augment our mission to help transform the lives of the individuals working with us. This is Dan Solomon on the left. If you recognize the name, it's because he was the same guy who did the project where he drove the truck around the United States, collected the building fragments. He's now our lead trainer. UB students have also been in the mix. This young woman is working on the restoration of a furniture piece. Inside the space, we have built a variety of what I think are very interesting and impressive structures. And the structures that we've been making are designed for two purposes, two primary purposes. One is to augment the training program by creating very innovative, immersive environments inside, and to also allow our students the opportunity to work on buildings in creative and interesting ways. So the spaces that I'm showing you now are actually the two giant towers that we've built in the center. This is actually our presentation space. There's actually steps that lead up here with seating. And then this is our library space. And the library space is now being built out by the trainees in the soccer construction skills training program. So we've taken the individuals from the program and we're teaching them skills and then asking them to make contributions to the interior of the library. This is before we got going on. You can kind of see how it frames these wild perspectives of the interior of the church. And then here's Luis and Enrique laying the floor. I mean, use this as an opportunity to teach them how to lay a wood floor, because a lot of times you go into these houses in the city of Buffalo, the first thing someone rehabbing a house wants to do is get rid of the old floor because it's easier to put carpet down. Well, what if we actually taught people how to productively repair the wood floor? So these two guys took that on as a task over a period of weeks, and they worked together on laying the floor. Enrique is now working at Sinatra, and Luis is working at Dominic Cortez. So the end result of the 15-week program is a job in a construction-related field. CJ Ties, he's showing off his toolbox. The first project we did, intro to safety training, basic shop know-how, familiarity with hand tools, power tools, and then build your toolbox. That's CJ with his toolbox. CJ was just hired 2 days ago by BRD Construction. This is Sheree Smalls working on an aspect of a jewelry box that she built as a part of the program. And Enrique and Everett. What's been amazing for me, and well, many things amazing about that, but the degree of camaraderie and really familial relations that developed among these 12 participants over a 15-week period has been quite extraordinary. And here you see them on the front there. We entered the program, began the program with 13 participants, finished with 12. Eight of them now have full-time jobs. Two more are coming back to work with us for a second term to upskill. And one, we're working very hard to get her an ECC. So what we're looking at here is a very complex web of synergistic relationships between building industry professionals, architects, job development specialists, social service providers, artists, and I'm just kind of the choreographer. You know, I'm just doing 10 different things every day. But for me, the important thing is that to make meaning in a place, you gotta put all the pieces together, because you only get to the point where people feel like something special if it truly is special and they see the web. The web is the most, I think, the web is the most important thing. This hard to see. But now you see these two giant towers in the back. We're starting to build creative woodworking projects up the side, build models of the larger space of the building, teaching skills in how actually the dome of the, sorry, the arches of the church were constructed. We have now developed relationships with some of the most established building industry professionals in the region. Steve Ubra, who's the lead cabinet maker at the Darwin Martin House, gave us a tour where, not to make you all jealous, but instead of going through the docent-led tour, Steve snuck us in and opened up all the cabinets inside the Martin House and showed us all the joints and how he built all the millwork and the trim work. And let's see, Jim Cordes from the Roycroft campus, he's the furniture maker in residence at the Roycroft. He spent 2 weeks with our students as a kind of a workshop instructor. And turns out Jim also is a nutritionist. When we found that out, we got Jim involved in the nutrition program. Who else? Quincy Kotzka, who is at the University of Buffalo, is a master's student there, has been coming in. And so we started to create some linkages with the university. This coming term, we are focusing our project on the theme of the Victorian house. So over the next 15 weeks, we'll be looking at a Victorian house from a variety of different vantage points, from framing to decorative surface treatments, and look forward to sharing that work with you in the future.
Perfect. Hang on there.
I'd let you go all day. It's a most fascinating story. But I want to get our Q&A in as much as possible. And people have parking meters to pay for. Things of those minor details. Let's hear the questions, folks. We always get some good questions from this group. Here we go. We can start at the back and work to the front.
Hello, I'm Mac. Thanks for your talk. You mentioned there was a couple of holes in the roof. Now, was there any on the? I'm expecting maybe there was maybe some pointing that needed to be done on the, especially in the back exterior, the older part of the church. Is this true?
Yeah, we haven't done the pointing yet. The pointing still needs to be done. Basically, the roof repair work was it's been some more or less patch jobs for now. It's interesting because Mike Zink from Century Architectural Sheet Metal worked on the church's roof for 25 years while it was managed by Immaculate Conception Church. And so he knows the roof better than anyone else. And he used to get a call every spring from the pastor at Immaculate Conception. So, Mike, time to go back up on the roof. So when I started calling him and said, Mike, it's time to go back on the roof. I think he thought he thought he'd entered the Twilight Zone, I think. But Mike has been up there helping us with repairing the slate. We're going to need to do a major roof repair effort in the near future, probably in the next 5 years. So we're trying to lay the groundwork for that now. But the primary issue is get the water out, get the building safe, and start doing stuff. Because it's very hard to get people excited about contributing to capital investments in a project. If you don't have something going. So the important thing for us was, let's get it going, okay? And then we'll worry about that. We'll stabilize the building and we'll get things going and we'll take it as it comes.
I feel this is one of the more important projects going on in Buffalo. Many good things going on. But I have felt this way since I first ran into Dennis. He's modest. So look what you've just done in the last half hour. You took us on a theoretical, philosophical discussion from an architect standpoint, building materials, the journey through a house, almost, and ended up, and here's where I'll take this to another point. Russell Davidson was in that picture as the Albright Max overseer of this program, coordinator. And he mentioned to me how the Department of Social Services has never had, in all of its experimental programs, any success rate over 40%. If my math is correct, 8 out of 12 gets you at the 75% level, the most successful, tangible training program where people are trained and find employment. That's very, very specific and worthy of applause. From the theoretical to the practical. Questions I had.
Maybe you covered this, but I wondered how you select the people.
Yeah, the selection process is important, and for that, the social services department deserves some credit because they have put their caseworkers on this and look for individuals who they believe have the potential for success in the program. They do a pre-screening. So they're looking at those who might have to express an interest in construction, express an interest in working with their hands, maybe have some background in building, but not at all required. And they send them to me, and I do an interview. We invite them to the site, show them around. The site is a little bit of a hook too. So we bring them and say, show them the shop, and talk to them a bit about what their interests are. And you know, it's a more or less informal interview. But for us, the most important thing is being able to show up every day. And willingness to engage. You know, those are the two most important things. And those are the things that the employers are saying. When we went to conduct outreach with different businesses, a lot of really super high quality manufacturers are saying, Dennis, it doesn't matter the skill set. Give me someone who wants to work, and we'll show up every day, and we'll teach them. And so we're learning from that.
Other questions? We're running a little late. If you have to leave, we certainly understand. But if you, I'd like to keep this going just for a few more minutes.
Where have you been getting your funding from, and where do you expect to get or hope to get it from in the future?
That's the million-dollar question right there. So we began conducting some more or less modestly scaled fundraising efforts in collaboration with the Albright Knox Art Gallery about 2.5 years ago. And the primary contributors were developers, businesses, private individuals. And then we won the National Endowment for the Arts Our Town grant, which is a highly competitive national program, which I read today in the paper is now on the chopping block again. Highly competitive national program that's centered on placemaking. It's really called the Our Town program. So that was a gift of $100,000, and we used that to leverage a match. So we have enough to run the program now for about 2 years, while we complete the process for certification as a New York State Department of Education non-degree granting institution, which opens up funding from various state and national sources. So accreditation is the key. So we're working out the kinks of the curriculum in order to develop the capacity to receive the accreditation from New York State. At the same time, we are working on the design build fee for service initiative. And I can't say exactly what the first commission is because it's not signed on the dotted line yet, but we're starting to get commissions for projects in the city. So the revenue streams will be coming in the future, optimistically, from the fee-for-service initiative in combination with the funding angles that are opened up through accreditation. In the meantime, we will need to rely upon grants from local foundations, private individuals, corporations, and businesses. But I'm not a guy who wants to go around making that my career.
Time, and can you spend a minute if people have individual questions?
Sure, yeah.
Afterwards, like that. Tell you what, any last question for the good of the greater good? All right, then we're going to wrap this up. And here's a here's our Explore Buffalo.
Oh wow, awesome!
Book with Chuck Lacusa. Maybe you've got some kids in your life or someplace that can use it, and note cards from the library.
Awesome.
From the architecture exhibit that's going on right now. And I marvel at this program. I enjoy it. I enjoy you. We're going to have to figure out how to connect the sound that I've recorded with your laptop and put that on your website somehow so you've got
a
marketing piece.
You can do that.
We'll talk about it. I've got some technical assistance that might help us on this.
Great.
All right, folks, we do this because you show up. I can't thank you enough. Winter is moving through, and here you are enjoying, I trust, one of Buffalo's great marvels. We imagine our future. By the way, the theme is so consistent.
I love it.
Our main theme is to imagine a healthy, wealthy, and sustainable community. And it's going to take projects like this to get us thinking literally out of the box, out of the house.
How do we get in the box anyway?
And help ourselves see it from all sides.
Yeah.
We put ourselves there. All right, folks, thank you so much. Enjoy the day. See you next week, too. Who is next? Oh, Melissa Brown next week. Thank you. And our sign-up sheet. Make sure everybody signed in. It's back there. Thank you. Yeah, Melissa Brown will be speaking next week. She is the director of the Buffalo History Museum. So, oh, and Jerry, thank you. Great courses are here. Anybody wants some of the catalogs, feel free to take them.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for your preserving efforts.
Oh, thanks.
I came by on the bike one day.
Oh, yeah?
Look around.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. I'm always at large.
Hey, come in. Come by again.
Yeah.
That was like in July or something.
Yeah. Probably like trying to get set up.
Yeah.
It's different now.
Yeah. I wanted to also say your site, the site of the church, is one of the most strategic spots for the beauty of the aesthetics and the beauty of looking at built environment. It's dynamic. That spot is so dynamic, especially when you're coming down Elmwood. You see the skyline, which is beckoning you to look up and further out.
Totally,
but at the same time, your facade and of course the parish house and the Buffalo Club also. It's very dynamic.
It's really great. It reminds me of Rome.
You got
like carved out the vistas.
You got Plus, just even from that. Also, I want to ask you, you had some connection to you said a radio program, Smart Cities?
Oh, Smart Cities. I don't even think they're around anymore.
I was going to ask you, could that be heard locally?
I wonder.
Okay.
In fact, I don't even think you want to hear what I had to say 10 years ago. It's probably not so interesting. But that was a program that was.
It was a
national program. They focused on urban issues. I wonder what happened
now,
to that.
Now, did they have it on NPR?
Yes.
Oh, they did.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Quick demo type of thing. I just have him take this exhibit on architecture books.
Oh, yeah.
Using virtual
Reality, that's his company that he's developed.
Oh, yeah?
And take an exhibit that's going to come down in March and archive it, but make it also a tease for helping people come to the exhibits in the future. Like that.
So I've actually, cool. I might be putting this VR marketing